It is Mental Health Month. I'm sure you've heard that a lot. We're hearing a lot of people banging on about it. So I thought I'd get my favourite neuropsychologist, Dr. Hannah Carell, on the line. Hi there, Doc. How are you?
Hi, Jenny. How are you?
Yeah, really well, thank you. Why should we care about mental health?
Oh, yes. You're so right. Like every week it seems like there's always something in vogue about mental health this and are you okay day that? And it's sort of almost gets a bit desensitizing after a while. But there is a very good reason why you should care and you should listen to this information, because it's basically your hack, your life hack, into getting like the elite advantage on your life so that you can be the best version of yourself. And so there's some pretty quick and easy tips on how you can really level up when it comes to excelling in your life.
Ah, so it's sort of like the equivalent of doing physical fitness, but for your brain, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You go to the gym to get stronger and fitter and, you know, perhaps look better, but mental health tips are the kind of things that are like what will help you to have more wit, higher IQ, be faster and more productive, to be the kind of literally the best version of yourself and your highest IQ level, your smartest version of yourself. It all starts with what is at the foundation of your life, the bottom of your, you know, we all, if you've ever built a tower with children, you know, you have like you build the blocks on top of one another, and if the bottom blocks aren't stable, then what happens to the tower? It all falls over. So we have to have a good foundation in order to build upon, and that is what gets you to really reach the elite levels in life, in any domain in life. So that's why mental health is so important, and it's actually a lot easier than people think to really excel in their mental health.
What do you think is the first step in terms of getting that foundation stronger?
Well, I mean, I think there's a really great way we can, I suppose you've probably heard the pillars of mental health, and maybe this is a good time for me to kind of mention, just so we have a framework to understand, because it's a big wide world out there of mental health. So a really quick and easy way to understand mental health is the pillars of good mental health, which is, there's five of them: diet and exercise, one; humor, two; three is social connectedness, four is mindfulness, and five is sleep. So there's quick and easy hacks to each of those to help you to feel better if you want to hear some of them.
Oh, yeah. Should we start with diet and exercise?
Yeah, fantastic. So this is pillar one of good mental health. So essentially, you know, in your body you have all of these amazing neurotransmitters that help you to feel happy. You've probably heard of a few. There's serotonin, dopamine, lots of different neurotransmitters that actually make you feel happy.
Ooh, give me some of them.
Yeah. Well, that's what everybody wants, right? We all want to feel better. But what people don't realize is, where do the building blocks of those neurotransmitters actually come from? How do they even get into your head? And most people are surprised to learn that 90% of your serotonin, which is your happy neurotransmitter, is made in your gut, not your brain.
Oh.
So it really makes a difference what you do with your body and what you put in your mouth as to how many of these happy neurotransmitters you have available to help you actually feel happy. So a good golden rule is the 30 rule. If you can get 30 different types of plants, of vegetables, of things that grow in your diet every week, 30 different things, so you can count them, you know, tonight, Jenny, you can count how many 30, there are strawberries, bananas, vegetables, anything counts. This is herbs, anything that grows. If you can get 30 of those a week, that is going to give you the best chances of having a good diet that will give you those neurotransmitters, and also moving your body for at least 30 minutes a day. And that movement of your body is actually what triggers something called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is what is the catalyst that turns the food into the neurotransmitters that make you happy.
Ah, there you go. All right.
Yeah.
Mindfulness is a bit of a buzzword these days.
Mm-hmm,
so mm-hmm. What is that like, trying to be in the moment?
Yes. So mindfulness. I know everybody rolls their eyes when I say this one. They're like, oh, airy, fairy, touchy, feely. But actually the thing that mindfulness is, what makes it so powerful is that you've got two different systems in your body. You've got your sympathetic system, which is your fight and flight mode. So that's, you know, that's the awooga, awooga, alert, alert, danger, Will Robinson. That's where your body is going. Oh my gosh, we're in danger. I need to flood this person's body with adrenaline and cortisol to keep this person fighting their way or flying their way out of this situation, which is great if there is a danger right there, but it's bad if there's nothing wrong and you're safe, but your body is chronically sending out stress hormones. So the reason mindfulness is so popular is because it turns off your sympathetic nervous system, your fight and flight mode, and it turns on your parasympathetic nervous system or your rest and restore system. And that's the one that lets your muscles relax. It lets your muscles grow and build. It releases different types of hormones that actually prevent aging. It improves, you know, your cell replication. So down to a cellular level, you are growing in a better way. And it helps you to feel calm and relaxed so you can be your best version of yourself. So mindfulness is a quick and easy hack that lets you turn off that stress system and turn on the rest system. And that can be as short as 1 minute a day. So you can start with 1 minute a day and gradually build up to maybe 5 minutes a day. And you will start to see the cumulative effect of your body being more relaxed and calm over the course of your life.
Ah, so how do you do that? You just are more attuned to what's happening in your body. And I don't know, for example, like if you're eating a sandwich, you're 100% focused on the sandwich.
yeah. Not being on autopilot. So it's not being in the past or the future. So often we're worrying about things that happened in the past or things that will happen in the future. It's like being in the present moment, taking a second to breathe, turn off those stress responses. A great way of doing it, as you say, is being present when we're doing a basic thing, like when you're walking or when you're eating, really being in that moment and experiencing it.
Dr. Hannah Carell's with us. She's a neuropsychologist. We're talking about the five pillars of mental wellness and why we should care about mental health. And this is my favourite one, Doc, humour.
Me too. Hey, Jenny, what do you call a sad strawberry?
I don't know. You tell me.
This is going to crack you up. A blueberry.
Oh. That's very funny.
Oh.
It's a serious dad joke right there.
I know. So sad. So humor is the most powerful, I suppose, way of tricking your body. So you probably notice when you're feeling low and feeling down, if you do the opposite action to what you're feeling, it changes your emotions. So putting on a happy song, some happy music, a happy comedy, telling jokes, going watching a comedy or something funny actually has the effect of changing the way that you feel. So if we listen to sad music when we're feeling down, that tends to make us feel worse. If we listen to happy music when we're down, that makes us feel better. And researchers have actually gone as far as doing experiments where they trick participants into smiling or frowning. The participants don't know that that's what they're doing. They make them hold a pen in their mouth and they either start smiling or they start frowning, and then they measure their mood before and after. And the people who were tricked into putting their muscles in their face in a way that made them smile actually felt better after the experiment than the people who made their mouth into a frown. So, you know, that old adage, turn that frown upside down. If you make your body do things that are happy, so laughing, smiling, those things actually make your mood change. So things like tracks, which are just laughter tracks of people laughing, watching comedy, hanging out with friends, which goes into another pillar we'll talk about in a second. But all of those things have a massive effect on your body and can actually fool your body into releasing a whole bunch of happy hormones and making you feel so much better.
Brilliant. Is that the case as well for even like a dark sense of humour?
Yes, definitely.
Oh, good.
I mean, I work in the hospital and you do end up getting a little bit of a dark sense of humour sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how humans cope. That's how we cope with things. Humour is our, you know, breaking the ice, and it's a tension relief, and it's something that helps us to kind of, it's quite cathartic,
yeah.
A way to release any kind of tension or anxiety. So it's really natural to engage in a little bit of laughter every day.
And you alluded to social connection before.
Yes. So this is, I think, a fourth mindfulness. Fourth mindfulness pillar, mental health pillar. And this one is all about essentially company, right? So this one's great because it taps also into neuroplasticity, which you and I have talked about on the show in the past. And that is the process where your brain is growing and changing and making new networks. And it doesn't matter what age you are. It does not matter what age you are. Your brain is always able to grow and change and engage in neuroplasticity. Now, learning and social connection, spending time with people socially, is one of the key ways to get your brain to kick into neuroplastic mode. So spending time with a friend or just in company with other people, on the phone, in person, all of that does wonders for your brain because you cannot predict what is going to happen in a social interaction. You can't predict what that person's about to say, what they're about to do. Your brain is always on its toes, essentially, when it comes to having a conversation with that person. So that uniqueness and that diversity and that ability to kind of just engage in a very in-the-moment interaction is what stimulates your brain and enlivens your neurotransmitters and creates new pathways in your brain. And that kind of stimulation is like, you know, if you've ever had a really cold shower and you walk out of it feeling totally invigorated, well, you know, socializing is kind of like a cold shower for your brain. It really gets you out there and it gets you stimulated.
And you don't even need that many friends to get that.
No, absolutely not. No. It can be with, you know, as little as like one person, a couple of minutes, you know, even just walking down to the coffee shop and ordering a coffee. How's your day going? How you going, mate? Being around other people makes a world of difference. And humans are social creatures, which is why we've struggled so much during, you know, COVID lockdown. We are social creatures. We need to be close to one another. So, you know, taking the time to go, you know, maybe I won't order my coffee over my Uber app. Maybe I'll actually walk down to the cafe and get outside and stand next to another human and say, how's your day going? That can actually work wonders for your brain as well. So it's worth spending a bit of time with other people.
And this last pillar is something that I've resisted, particularly when I was a teenager and in my early 20s, for a long, long time. And it's only really recently that I've realised the extraordinary capacity that sleep has in improving your life, making you happier, as a mood booster, a painkiller, all sorts of things. Sleep is absolutely extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, that's well said, very well said. That, like, you know, people say there's no such thing as a silver bullet, there's no such thing as, you know, a cure-all, but I mean, if there was one thing that was the closest possible to a silver bullet, it would be sleep. Sleep has magical abilities to help us feel so much better. And, you know, some of the theories into why that's the case is because when you're asleep, that's when your brain kind of goes through and tidies up all the mess that was made the day before. And it's like combing out the plaques and tangles that happen between when you sleep, that's when your brain cleans out all the neurofibrillary plaques and tangles that build up in your brain during the day. And those are the things that build up over time to cause things like dementia. So the more we sleep and the better quality of the sleep that we have, the more healthy we are, the better we age into older life and as we get older. So sleep is the time when your body regenerates, it heals, it cleans things up. And exactly as you said before, it's kind of like, you know, everything feels better after a good night's sleep. So the golden rule is to get about 8 hours of sleep every day. And I know a lot of people will argue that maybe they need less than that. But really, for most adults, you do need at least 8 hours of good quality sleep per day. And as we age, our circadian rhythms change, which basically means the time where you have the most biological urge to go to sleep changes. So with teens, they might want to go to sleep quite late in the evening and then rise very late in the day the next morning. With older adults, they tend to go to bed earlier and they'll wake up quite early in the day. And for people in their middle age, it might be, you know, around like 10 o'clock, rising at about 9-ish, which is the optimal time for us to sleep. So the best way you can get the best quality sleep is respecting your sleep and making sure you practice good sleep hygiene, which is a little bit like good hand hygiene, but for your sleep. So some basic ones include not doing things in the bedroom unless it's sleep or sex. So, you know, don't hang out on your mobile phone when you're in bed.
Right.
You know,
but you could read a book though, right?
Reading a book, doing comfortable things that put you in a state where you could go to sleep. Hanging out on the phone is the opposite of going to sleep, and it's telling your brain, here's a nice big blue light that's telling my brain not to release melatonin, which is the hormone that makes us want to go to sleep. So that's why we say, you know, trying not to have your phone in your bedroom at nighttime, dimming the lights, making the environment conducive to go to sleep is what helps your brain know, yep, it's bedtime now, the sun has gone down, release the melatonin, that makes me actually go to sleep. So a simple hack is, keep your phone out of the bedroom, try not to play on your phone in the middle of the night, and just just keep a consistent pattern which tells your body every night, this is about the time I go to sleep and this is about the time that I wake up. You can always try things like Headspace. Headspace has a great app that helps people to go to sleep and stay asleep. That's another really great option too.
Hmm. Oh, fabulous. So with those five pillars of mental wellness in mind, I suppose, yeah, then you just sort of build on it every day. You can, it's like flexing muscles, but in your brain.
Absolutely. And I always say to people, you know, would it be worth 1%? You know, you imagine that you could be 1% better. You feel 1% better every day by doing this small little thing. Would you take that? And people go, oh, 1%, that's not that much. But if you times 1% by every single day of the year, that's like a solid 30% by the end of the year. So these things really do add up cumulatively. And if you think about all the other things that you're doing every day that might be detracting from your health, those are adding up too. So that those little 1% is where you don't get enough sleep, where you don't laugh, where you don't get out of the house, they add up as well. So I guess it's us getting in a more active role in our mental health to say, I can go in at the trajectory of feeling better in a year's time by the little things that I do, and I'm going to get in the driver's seat of my own mental health through these nice, quick and easy tips that we've just discussed today.
Oh, so lovely to have you on the program as always. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Jenny.